Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the reaction to the administration's Remain in Mexico plan. All lines have been placed on a listen-only mode. If you should require assistance throughout the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad to reach a live operator. At this time, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Wendy Young, President of Kids in Need of Defense. The floor is yours.
Thank you, operator, and thank you everyone for joining us this morning. I'm really pleased to be joined by four organizations who have great expertise in asylum and are united in our concerns about the administration's recently announced Remain in Mexico plan. The organizations are Kids in Need of Defense, Women's Refugee Commission, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and Human Rights First. Our concern is that the Remain in Mexico proposal that was announced is a dramatic departure in U.S. policy towards those seeking protection in the United States, and it fundamentally upends our longstanding refugee and asylum policy and practice, placing already vulnerable people at greater risk of harm, including children who arrive alone at our borders in search of protection. The plan also represents an enormously dangerous precedent worldwide by requiring individuals who are in search of asylum to remain in unsafe third countries in violation of Article 33 of the Refugee Convention of 1951. Let me start by saying, and you will hear more from our speakers, that Mexico is not a safe third country. All of our organizations have been on the ground in Tijuana recently and are united in our assessment that conditions there are very unstable and very unsafe. Children and families who are fleeing threats to their lives are frequently further targeted throughout the journey and when they arrive in Tijuana, facing significant risk of extortion, trafficking, kidnap, and sexual assault. And they are in areas that are frequently controlled by criminal gangs, drug traffickers, and cartels. The conditions on the ground are starkly reflected by the fact that just this week, two unaccompanied children who were in the migrant camps in Tijuana were murdered. The situation is further deteriorating and will deteriorate only further if the Remain in Mexico policy is implemented, because as the number of people who back up at our borders mounts, the conditions are going to further deteriorate. Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen yesterday stated in testimony before the House Judiciary Committee that unaccompanied children would not be affected by the Remain in Mexico plan. However, we remain concerned that that, in fact, may not be the truth, as the Mexican government implied that they would be covered. And even if they are not covered, what we're seeing already on the ground in Tijuana is that children are being pushed back and denied the ability to present themselves at the U.S. border. So I will now introduce our speakers and allow them to share with you in greater detail some of our concerns. We have Eleanor Acer, who is Senior Director of Refugee Protection at Human Rights First. Second, Leah Chavla, who's Policy Advisor for the Migrant Rights and Justice Program at the Women's Refugee Commission. Lisa Friedman, who's Vice President for Regional Policy Initiatives at KIND, Kids in Need of Defense. And finally, Dr. Alan Shapiro with the American Academy of Pediatrics Immigrant Health Special Interest Group. Eleanor, I'll ask you to speak first, and then Leah will follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy, and thank you for organizing this call. I'm Eleanor Acer. I am the Senior Director for Refugee Protection at Human Rights First. The Trump administration's latest plan to reject asylum seekers at the border and make them wait in Mexico is another blatantly illegal attempt to evade and violate laws passed by Congress to protect people seeking asylum in this country. Under this plan, the details of which have not yet been disclosed, it appears that U.S. border officials will not allow asylum seekers into the United States, even if they seek refuge at official U.S. border posts and have a credible fear of persecution. Asylum seekers will be forced to wait in Mexico while their immigration court cases proceed. U.S. asylum and immigration laws make clear that asylum seekers have the right to seek protection at official border posts, known as ports of entry, as well as when they are physically present in the country after crossing the border. Pushing asylum seekers back into Mexico is absolutely illegal under U.S. immigration laws. Both Sections 208 and Section 235 of U.S. immigration law make clear the processes that apply to people seeking refuge at our borders. The law exempts people seeking asylum from the provision that the administration is relying on. Under the law, asylum seekers who request protection at border posts cannot be turned away if they are determined to have a credible fear of persecution. There have been some reports that the administration has created some sort of screening standard for people who fear persecution in Mexico. This convoluted scheme and the screening standard, which sounds as though, from the few reports there have been, is different and higher than the one created by Congress, is absolutely inadequate. Those blocked by the new standard will be forced back to Congress and allowed to enter the United States only for their removal hearings and then ultimately if granted asylum. These are not the standards created by Congress. In addition, Congress actually enacted a specific provision of law to govern arrangements under which some asylum seekers can be returned to other countries potentially. Those are known as Safe Third Country Agreements. But this scheme is not such an agreement, nor could it be. The Safe Third Country standards spelled out in U.S. law have not been satisfied. Not only is Mexico a dangerous country for refugees, but its asylum system leaves many refugees at risk of return to persecution. The plan also violates U.S. law requirements ensuring that people in immigration court removal proceedings have the right to be represented by legal counsel authorized to practice in U.S. immigration courts. By forcing asylum seekers to stay outside the United States while their removal proceedings are pending, the Trump administration would prevent many asylum seekers from securing, meeting with, and working with U.S. legal counsel to gather evidence and prepare the materials necessary for their cases. This scheme would certainly lead many refugees who meet U.S. legal standards to be denied asylum because of their lack of access to legal counsel. Like the asylum ban recently enjoined by the courts, this plan is yet another attempt to do an end run around laws passed by Congress. The president does not have the authority to direct U.S. agencies to evade and violate laws passed by the U.S. Congress. The scheme would also run afoul of international law as it leaves refugees in dangerous territories where some will be returned to their countries of persecution in violation of the Refugee Convention and Protocol. In addition to its many legal flaws, this scheme will increase rather than decrease the humanitarian debacle at the border. Asylum seekers turned away from U.S. ports of entry and from the U.S. border face acute dangers, including murders, kidnapping, trafficking, and cartel violence, which my colleagues will address on this call. Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor. Leah Chavla, would you like to go next?
Yes, thank you, Wendy, and thank you to everyone who's on the line. My name is Leah Chavla, and I work at the Women's Refugee Commission. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the observations we've made on the ground. I was in Tijuana the last week of November and went to the Benito Juarez shelter. I spoke with mothers. I spoke with children when I was there. And just this week, another team from the Women's Refugee Commission was on the ground. In fact, they got back yesterday. And they saw two new shelters in addition to Benito Juarez, including the Barretal shelter. We have observed together, both teams, we have observed some very, very concerning conditions in Tijuana, especially for families and for unaccompanied children. And I'd like to touch on first unaccompanied children, and highlight some of the points as well that Wendy made in her introduction. There are very real risks to unaccompanied children, and this was demonstrated, highlighted, in fact, this past weekend with the murder of two boys of Honduran nationality. These boys were waiting to present themselves for asylum in the United States. They should not have been turned away. They should not have been forced to wait in Mexico. I think as many of you know on this call, asylum seekers, currently the only way for asylum seekers to be able to present themselves at the San Ysidro port of entry is to sign up on a list. The list is unofficial, and they aren't allowing unaccompanied children to sign up. I've heard of a couple of different reasons why this might be, and when I was on the ground, what I was told is that unaccompanied children need to be accompanied by an adult. So imagine that, right? That makes no sense. This is a system that is ripe for exploitation, asking a child who is coming alone to find an adult to come with them. And there are other things that are happening too, but the point is that children are not being allowed access to this list. They're being turned away, and this system is failing them. And so I think, you know, if 235B2C is implemented, it raises significant questions as well as this already not working. Things are already not working. People are already falling through the cracks, including the most vulnerable. I'd like to also talk a little bit about families. We've observed some very concerning things for families, and especially for mothers traveling with their children. So even though Tijuana, they've set up a job fair, for example, to help people find employment while they're in Tijuana, but we remain very, very concerned that women, especially, are not able to avail themselves of possible benefits or opportunities, including this one, because they're the primary caregivers, and because of the lack of security in Tijuana, many of these mothers do not feel comfortable seeking employment or leaving their children in the camp to be able to even be able to go to the job fair to find employment or to sign up or to access other benefits, including health benefits or even, you know, medical revisions, et cetera. And so I think it raises some real concerns. Mothers that we've spoken with have flagged that there are a lot of new faces around the camps, and they don't necessarily feel comfortable in trusting, you know, strangers with the care of their children or leaving their children. And so we're very concerned about what this is going to look like as families continue to have to wait in Tijuana. And finally, from the team that recently went down this week, some of the concerns they raised about the location of Barital, the new shelter, which is located at some distance from the port of entry, is that there's not access for those families, for those individuals who are at Barital. There's not a way for them, an easy way for them to get to the border where the list is for them to sign up. They have to find their way on their own, back and forth, pay for those costs. I spoke with a mother, and she was with two children, and she had no money. So imagine now being located very far away and not being able to access this protection. I think in closing, we're very, very concerned about this, and 235B2C would be a way to if implemented, would exacerbate these concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah. Next, Lisa Friedman from KIND.
Thanks so much, and thanks everyone for joining. This is Lisa Friedman, Vice President for Regional Policy and Initiatives with Kids in Need of Defense. So KIND also was in Tijuana. We were there last week, and we spoke with unaccompanied children at official government DEEF shelters, child welfare shelters. We spoke with children who are living on the streets, and we spoke with children in private shelters. We also spoke with Mexican child welfare officials, Mexican immigration officials, U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials, and nonprofit organizations, international organizations working with migrants along the northern border in Tijuana seeking to gain entry to the United States. And like my colleague Leah just said, we also share all the concerns that have been expressed. And I wanted to talk about our observations of unaccompanied children and the situation of access to the United States to seek protection. What we found was that unaccompanied children are being systematically denied access to apply for protection in the United States. And we found that children who are waiting for a chance to seek protection or those who are turned away after having tried are living in squalid conditions and in grave danger. They're unsafe, and they absolutely feel unsafe as they wait. We learned that unaccompanied children are being physically blocked by both U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials and by Mexican officials from presenting themselves at the U.S. border. And these children are trying. They're not sneaking in. They're actually trying to present themselves and seek protection the way that they've been told to, and they're still being denied. Problem number one, and we really identified three major problems with access to the United States. Problem number one is that some CBP agents are turning unaccompanied children away. KIND interviewed unaccompanied children who were told by CBP agents that they were not allowed to ask for protection in the United States. And we spoke with unaccompanied children who were handed back to Mexican authorities without any explanation from CBP. One boy was asked by CBP if he was from Honduras or quote-unquote one of those other countries before being turned back by CBP to Mexican officials. Refusing to process children very clearly violates the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act that Congress passed into law a decade ago, specifically to protect this vulnerable population and to prevent exactly what is currently happening, which is children being turned away and left in danger. Problem number two with access is that unaccompanied children are being blocked from seeking protection in the United States by Mexican immigration officials. Directly in front of the bridge to the port that CBP has designated for processing asylum claims, Mexican private security guards and Mexican immigration officials stop any child that they believe is unaccompanied and tell them that they're not allowed to pass to present themselves to U.S. officials. Children may be turned back to the streets of Tijuana or transferred to the custody of Mexico's Child Welfare Agency, DIF. Unaccompanied children told us of these experiences, and Mexican officials confirmed that according to Mexico's protocol, they could not let unaccompanied children enter the port, but that instead they had to stop them and turn them over to DIF, the Child Welfare Agency. Some unaccompanied children reported being told incorrectly by Mexican immigration officials that the United States no longer accepts asylum seekers from Central America. Problem number three with access for unaccompanied children is that unaccompanied children who come into DIF custody are being prevented from seeking protection in the United States. DIF offers these children exactly two choices: apply for asylum in Mexico or be returned to their country of origin. The reality is that very few unaccompanied children seek asylum in Mexico. This is because they either feel unsafe to do so, and they feel safer in the United States, or because they have family in the United States, which may be parents, or for both reasons. But regardless, unaccompanied children are not being given any information about the legal option of applying for protection in the United States. In fact, children who come into DIF custody are generally processed very quickly for deportation. And if they express a fear of return to their country, at that point, they're offered only the option of seeking asylum in Mexico, whether they feel safe to do so or not. As a result, unaccompanied children are fearful of being detected by DIF. Kind met many children who believe they had to hide from Mexican child welfare authorities. They had to hide to avoid detention and deportation. DIF's actions are actually having the perverse effect of causing children to hide from them, from the very officials who are supposed to be protecting them. As a result, these children are living in extremely precarious conditions and are at extreme risk of harm. And as my colleagues have mentioned, the tragic murder last weekend of two Honduran teenagers in Tijuana shows the deadly results of children being trapped along the U.S. border and blocked by both Mexican and U.S. immigration officials from seeking protection in the United States in violation of U.S. laws. In 2017, KIND conducted extensive interviews of Central American migrant children and published a report finding that severe and widespread sexual and gender-based violence, combined with an almost complete lack of access to protection and justice in their countries of origin, forces many Honduran, Salvadoran, and Guatemalan children, women, and LGBTI people to flee their countries in search of safety. These brutal forms of violence driving child migration from Central America include child sexual abuse, domestic violence, human trafficking and exploitation, sexual and gender-based violence against LGBTI children and youth, and gang-based sexual violence, including girls who are forced into intimate relationships with gang members on threat of death of themselves or of their family members if they resist or they refuse, and girls who are forced into being sex slaves to gangs. The impunity rate for crimes involving sexual and gender-based violence remains at the shockingly high level of 95% in these three countries. The threats to these children are not over once they reach Mexico, however. In Mexico, they remain unsafe. They remain at risk of further sexual and gender-based violence. A high percentage of girls, women, and LGBTI people experience SGBV in transit, including rape and assault, harassment, trafficking, and exploitation at the hands of human traffickers, of smugglers, of gangs, and of drug cartels. In border cities, girls are extremely vulnerable to trafficking and exploitation. Some girls are forced to work in bars or nightclubs where they are sexually exploited. Unaccompanied children need access to safety, and they should not be forced to hide and dodge helper services in order to make a claim for protection in the United States. What is currently happening at the hands of U.S. and Mexican officials places children at great risk of deportation back to these types of extreme violence, or otherwise falling prey to further sexual and gender-based violence, or worse, at the hands of smugglers, drug cartels, human traffickers, and other bad actors while stuck in Mexico. My colleague, Dr. Ellen Shapiro, will now talk about the grave conditions for children in Tijuana.
Thank you, Lisa. Dr. Shapiro?
Good morning, everybody, and thank you so much for inviting me on this call. My name is Dr. Alan Shapiro. I'm a pediatrician and the co-founder of Terra Firma, a program that cares for the complex needs of unaccompanied immigrant children and families seeking U.S. protection. I'm also a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics Immigrant Health Special Interest Group and the co-author of the American Academy of Pediatrics policy statement called The Detention of Immigrant Children. On behalf of the 67,000 pediatrician members of the AAP who are dedicated to the health and well-being of children, no matter where they are, no matter where they are born, we thank you so much for inviting us today. So, like our other callers, I returned from a trip to from Tijuana just last week. I was traveling with KIND, so I won't repeat really any of the findings. Only to make a point that reflects the dire need and the dire situation that children are in. So as you have heard, we went to Tijuana really to look specifically about what the conditions were like for unaccompanied immigrant children and what needs they specifically had. And what we found, of course, as you have heard, is incredibly disturbing. It was clear that both U.S. and Mexican policy were putting vulnerable children into dangerous situations where their lives are at risk. During the trip, we learned, as you had heard, that Mexican immigration authorities would absolutely not let unaccompanied children enter ports of entry without what they said a visa, which was, of course, ridiculous. Even if they were seeking U.S. protection or asylum, even if they stated they had a parent or a caregiver there to accept them in the U.S., they were being turned around. And I think that's a really important point. These are children that are oftentimes trying to reunite with family members that they do not have in Mexico, but they do have in the U.S. What we observed in Tijuana is that children have no way of seeking U.S. protection at a port of entry. They're simply not allowed to enter or present their request. They're not even allowed to be on the list, that list that's used to meter entry to the port of entry. And so they're given absolutely no alternative except to languish on the Mexican side of the border. And so what does this do for children? This pushes them underground. It pushes them to hide from Mexican officials because, of course, they're afraid that if they are apprehended by Mexican officials, they're going to be sent back to their country, the countries that they're escaping from, that they are then also pushed to finding adults to try to cross with, which leads to increased risk for exploitation and victimization, everything that we really don't want to happen to children. So as a result, children have three things that they can really, that can happen to them. One, it pushes them to cross between ports of entry, exactly what the administration doesn't want to happen. And of course, that in itself, crossing at the desert, crossing across the Rio Grande, presents its own dangers to children. Again, risk of victimization, risk of injury and dehydration, and even death. And really, we should be thinking of poor Jacqueline, the 7-year-old girl that died, because this is what happened to her and her family. Two, it prolongs their stay in Mexico and prolongs their living in unsafe migrant camps or on the streets of Tijuana. These migrant camps are not safe for children. They have exposure to weather and to the elements. These are not covered buildings oftentimes. The main migrant camps, the one by the sports stadium known as Benito Juarez and Baratal, which is 30 minutes away from the port of entry on the periphery of the city, they are not enclosed camps. They do not have roofs over their head. These are not safe places. They continue to be exposed to the environment, to the elements, while they are living in these places. The Benito Juarez has no running water, no showers, no toilets, no food serve, no communal food kitchens. I mean, these are places that children absolutely should not stay. I myself saw these conditions. I smelled those conditions. I saw a two-year-old child who had a recent seizure. The parents had called us over because they were worried about the child. The child had turned blue in the lips, arched back, so showed signs of seizure. By the time we arrived, the child had recovered. But of course, we implored this family to seek medical care. This child was eating baby formula, powdered formula out of the can itself. It wasn't mixed with water. There was no clean water for them to mix it with. So the child was eating the powder out of the can, which can be very dangerous because it's concentrated. We saw a 15-year-old boy living in the tiniest of tents, who was confused, was unsure where to go, what to do. But he was afraid to leave the caravan who he was traveling with for 2 months. And that is really understandable. You know, rather than maybe go to a shelter where he doesn't know the people, where he doesn't know if they have his best interests out for him, he decided to stay with this, you know, at Benito Juarez in this tent because he didn't know what would happen to him. And that really worried me because it kept him underground. It kept him away from medical services. It kept him away from educational services. It kept him away from needed legal counsel. So he would figure out, something legal counsel needed to figure out, how do I apply for humanitarian relief in the U.S.? So these are all things that I saw with my own eyes, and that really bothered me as I left home for the U.S. And then the third is that children can repatriate back to their homes. There was a news story that came out this week about a boy from the caravan, a teenager, an unaccompanied child, returned to Honduras. He arrived in San Pedro Sula, and soon after arriving was killed. So these are real concerns. These are not hypothetical concerns. We went to the shelter, a nonprofit shelter, where children were being kept in really safe conditions with hot meals, with really loving caregivers there, taken to medical facilities when needed. And unfortunately, because children had the right to go in to and from the shelter, two of those children who we had seen a few days earlier were murdered. And I am speechless to talk about the pain that this causes, the pain that these children who could have so easily, 2 months before, been processed and been safely in the U.S., were killed, are now dead, can never be brought back, can never be put on a list. They're dead. It infuriates me, as you can hear, and I worry, like, how many more children have to die before this changes. Any policy that forces a child into hiding, any policy that makes it harder for a child to seek safe haven, puts that child in danger. This practice runs in direct opposition to the American Academy of Pediatrics' own policy recommendations. In a statement last month, the AAP calls for children fleeing armed conflict to be able to petition for asylum and to be screened for evidence of human trafficking. We urge special protection and humanitarian assistance for these very children in Tijuana. Instead, after a harrowing journey and an uncertain future in these migrant camps, they're exhausted, confused, scared, and oftentimes will have to accept a ticket home. Sadly for them, that means returning to the dangerous situation where they just came from. The bottom line is that each of these three choices that are presented to children are not choices at all. These are choices that are failing children. There is no single agency, organization, or government entity that we found that is looking out for these children and guiding them to safe protection in the U.S. These children are alone, they are afraid, and they are being put in increasingly dangerous situations as a result of our own government's inaction. I can tell you that what I observed on the ground in Tijuana, these children are not being protected. First and foremost, we need these children, these unaccompanied children, to be prioritized. The numbers are not great. These children could be processed in a matter of days. Why should they not be given any choice at all, and why should they be made to wait in these absolutely incredibly dangerous situation? One of the visuals I had as I left Tijuana was a sign of a teenage girl that people were looking for, and it was, you know, help, please try to find her. And it makes me think of all the other teenagers that could end up like this poor girl. How many more children have to die before our immigration detention system and our humanitarian response changes to protect them? Shouldn't our humanitarian response, not our cruelty, be directly commensurate with our wealth and strength as a nation? That's the question I would leave for you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shapiro. And that concludes our presentations from our speakers. So we'd like to open it up to questions at this point.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad at this time. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypads at this time. Please hold while we pull for questions. We have a question from Yegenhai Torbati with Reuters. Go ahead, state your question.
Hi, thank you. It's Yegenhai Torbati with Reuters. I was wondering if you all could talk about some of the logistical challenges that might soon face asylum seekers if the administration carries out the plan that was announced yesterday. Could you speak about sort of, I know there haven't been a ton of details announced yet, but how you anticipate that might work with them being informed of their progress in their cases, or even just being able to show up for hearings and being able to prepare their asylum applications. That would be really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Eleanor, would you like to take a crack at that first?
Sure, I'm very happy to. You know, we have absolutely no details about how this process would be conducted, and you know, we think it's essentially impossible to conduct it, and it's certainly impossible to conduct it in ways that are consistent with U.S. law or with due process. You know, one of the biggest problems with this plan is that it would really eliminate the ability of many asylum seekers to be represented by U.S. immigration lawyers in a way that is meaningful. You know, it takes many meetings with your attorney to prepare your asylum case, to work together to gather evidence in support of your application. And, you know, these asylum seekers are going to be stranded in Mexico. Even if a lawyer were to go and visit on occasion, it makes representation, absolutely meaningless in many cases. We also have no idea how long people are going to be stranded in danger in Mexico. There are substantial backlogs in the U.S. immigration courts, so people are presumably going to be left waiting for very long periods of time in the United States. It's not at all clear how they're going to conduct these screening interviews or what kind of standards they're inventing to use in the process that they're designing. So it's hard to say really more about that at this point because we really have no information on how they're doing it, and it's impossible to imagine how they could do this consistent with U.S. law.
Thank you, Eleanor. Lisa, did you want to add anything particular to the access of unaccompanied children to the asylum system and the particular challenges that might raise?
Sorry, I was on mute. Well, if the plan, and I think it's been mentioned previously that it's unclear whether this plan will apply to unaccompanied children or not. I mean, as I was sort of saying earlier, in reality, they are in a way, already experiencing this plan, and not the plan itself, but they're already being prevented from accessing the United States, as we've been saying. If, however, they were to be based in Mexico and have their hearings in the United States, if this plan itself were to apply to them, in addition to, you know, what they're already experiencing, I cannot imagine the challenges. I mean, it's already in the context of the United States, you know, with a child having an attorney, given the kinds of trauma that so many of these kids have experienced, it really takes time to develop trust and to be able to represent them effectively in their cases. And so being distant, not in the same place as those children, the, you know, confusion that they already are experiencing, I imagine would only be exacerbated. I think it would be so difficult for them to develop trust, to be able to disclose what they've experienced. Also the challenges of, you know, how attorneys can work with any asylum seekers who are physically based in Mexico, but children, you know, in particular, I find really hard to imagine. And so I just think, and already unaccompanied children there's not representation for all unaccompanied children. So I think all of these issues would just be exacerbated in a way that is extremely concerning to imagine. I don't know if other colleagues would want to add more.
Hi, this is Alan. Could I just add that in our program, which is community-based in the South Bronx, where we have a large immigrant population, you know, we oftentimes have to spend months and months and months dealing with a child's post-traumatic stress disorder for the exact story, for the exact details of their trauma that are absolutely critical in their immigration hearing to come out, and for the children to actually speak openly about, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's experiencing direct violence, other forms of violence, or witnessing very severe forms of violence. And I can think of many stories in which children did not tell us or their lawyers what happened until months of therapeutic intervention. This is therapeutic intervention that children will not receive on the other side of the border. And we're really not giving children the opportunity that they need to be able to deal with the trauma that they have suffered. So I really worry about this from that perspective.
Thank you, Dr. Shapiro. I think we might be ready for the next question.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypads. There appears to be no questions in the queue.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for attending this. All of our speakers, I'm sure, would be happy to be available for additional follow-up, and have a nice day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a great day.